Los Angeles friendos, join Going In Raw as we go live on stage with Wrestling With Regrets' Brian Zane September 24th at the Nerdist Showroom in L.A. The link to tickets is in the description. Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Lars.
And welcome to Going In Raw, Count Out. This is the show where we count things down in the world of wrestling right here at youtube.com/Steven Larson. Be sure to hit that subscribe button and help us on our road to 182,000 subs. We're a mere 200 and some odd subs
200
away.
200 and change, yes.
200 and change away from reaching that elusive 182,000 mark. There was a 24-hour period when we were at like 200,000 something. That just turned out to be a YouTube glitch.
Yeah,
so we want these honest numbers.
That was such a great time.
It was a great period to be alive.
The halcyon days of this channel, I dare say.
The halcyon day.
Oh, sorry, day.
So yeah, if we reach 182, when we reach 182,000, we're gonna have a live stream to celebrate it with pizza, and cake with a giant 182 on it.
I prefer pie, honestly.
Well, 182 and then K. On it with both pizza and that, and we're gonna do games.
Okay,
gaming in Raw.
All right, today on Count Out, though, we're gonna talk about the best wrestlers in the world. PWI, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, just released their PWI 500,
yeah,
ranking their top 500 controversial wrestlers in the world. Well, I don't think there's any controversy about the number one
controversy. Well, we'll talk about that controversy in the wrestling community. With PWI's 500 magazine.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we just thought, hey, we'll take the opportunity to count down our 10 best wrestlers in the world.
Controversy number one. Why is Roman Reigns number four and Kenny Omega's number five?
It's because the win-loss record plays a role.
Oh, my goodness.
And for a stretch there, Roman Reigns won everything.
All right. Well, speaking of playing a role, speaking of criteria, Larson.
Yeah. What is our criteria? Number one criteria, being good.
Yes.
So that means in-ring performance.
Yes.
Promos.
All the tools, all the ingredients, if you will, to being a good pro wrestler.
Being good
is number one criteria. You have to be good. And obviously, that's a fairly subjective thing, but this is our show, so it's subject to our criteria.
Yes, number two, impact.
No.
Not
this
GFW.
Is not my special criteria for wrestlers in GFW.
Yeah, no. This is for example,
no GFWs,
yeah.
People made the list.
Crossover appeal potentially. Moving merchandise, putting butts in seats.
Right. Draw.
Draw.
Drawing power.
Making an impact not only in the wrestling industry, but potentially mainstream culture.
If this list was based strictly on impact, John Cena would probably be number one.
Yeah, maybe. But he hasn't been wrestling a lot.
He's not even on the list.
No.
Wow.
Third criteria, kayfabe. So, like, you know, like,
who's been written the best?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. You know, I mean, win-loss
record. Lost their one-loss record. Have they dominated their promotion, their show, their division,
mm-hmm,
to such an extent that they cannot be ignored?
There's a couple on here that I think... Kayfabe, well, yeah, number four for sure. Actually could be number one.
Four and six.
Yeah, six, but six is also is everything. Six is everything. Anyway.
So is four.
Moving on. So yeah, we're going to get started. This is not the Friend Awards.
No, this is just, we're taking like the same snapshot of time as PWI.
Exactly.
Just over the last calendar year.
We're trying to usurp PWI.
Or the last 365 days.
We should have a special name for this because the GIR, the GIR 10.
Fine.
Yeah.
And also.
Can you put some orchestral music in the beginning of the episode?
Maybe. There's a lot of wrestlers that we really, really, really like,
mm-hmm,
that unfortunately didn't make the cut.
Right.
Which is a bummer. If we could, we would do our own 500.
Yeah.
We just don't have the time to do it.
We don't have
the editorial staff.
I don't know 500 wrestlers.
Okay, we probably do at least 25.
No, we could do 25 for sure.
I mean, the shortlist I had like at least 30, I think.
Oh, wow.
So, anyway.
All right. So here we go. Number 10.
10.
Zack Sabre Jr.
How many belts did Zack Sabre Jr. have at one
point
this year?
Well, they called him Zacky Three Belts.
He had three belts
at one
time.
So he had at least three, and he would wear them all at the same time.
Pro Wrestling Guerrilla Championship, which he's since lost. He had the RevPro belt and then I think the Evolve world title.
Okay.
I think he still has two of those.
Now, Zack Sabre Jr., it's It's very interesting. So, like, when we came around kind of late to Zack Sabre Jr., we had heard a lot of...
Going into the Cruiserweight Classic, yeah.
Hullabaloo.
We'd heard a lot of good things about him, yeah.
Yeah. You dealing with your golden shuffle over there?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, we saw him in the Cruiserweight Classic. You know,
talk about Zack Sabre Jr., I mean, he brings the pain with all the stretching he does to people.
He does. So... When we saw him, so Cruiserweight Classic, yeah, put on a good match, but it wasn't until we saw him work heel at PWG live in person
in February this year,
that we were like, whoa, he's really cool. And then when he moved to New Japan and joined Suzuki-gun, it was kind of like, oh man, I hope he's not going to get lost in this faction business. But man,
not
talk about a standout period for Zack Sabre Jr., working heel, mesmerizing crowds. This is the craziest thing. Mesmerizing crowds with mat wrestling, with technical wrestling.
I've told the story. Yes.
Wrestling.
I've told the story several times, but I'm going to tell it again because it perfectly embodies the brilliance of Zack Sabre Jr. and why we feel he is one of the best wrestlers in the world working today.
Yes.
At the G1 special in USA, we were
fortunate enough to be
sitting second row for day two.
Yeah.
So we got to take in his match against Ishii pretty darn close to the ring.
Oh, yeah. We were very close.
And while he lost that match, there was this one specific instance where he had Ishii in a submission hold, stretching his body in all sorts of painful-looking ways.
Yeah.
And Ishii was trying to get to the ropes. Mm-hmm. And you could see the strategy that Sabre was employing by the second, by the beat. He was analyzing Ishii's position. I mean, you could just see it all in his face.
Yeah.
Ishii's position, his hand relative to the ropes, his foot relative to Ishii's hands, how he could counter what Ishii was trying to do. And you could see the process, his thought process the entire time, every little thing he was doing.
And the thing is, it's not just that he knew what moves he was going to do. It was as the character in the ring.
Yes.
He was improvising his strategy, which obviously these are, you know, predetermined. Probably, I imagine they call a lot of stuff in the ring, but his character was processing it. His character mm-hmm. was figuring it mm-hmm. out, even though this is a predetermined thing. It was fascinating to watch and compelling to watch, and it's all just submission wrestling. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah. Oh, his match at the Progress show we went to in Orlando was really good, too.
Yeah, that was really good. That was against
Jimmy Havoc,
that's right. Yeah,
yeah.
He bled, like, pretty quick.
Yeah. So, yeah, as you said, he has managed to take mat-based submission wrestling and turn it into, at times, when he's working at his peak, high drama.
Yeah.
And for that reason, amongst other reasons.
Mm-hmm. He's also the second coolest wrestler that pops their collar. I mean, you can't beat Finn Balor.
Finn Balor is literally a cool.
Nobody will ever pop their collar like Finn Balor. Nobody. But Zachy, three belts.
Yes.
He's pretty close.
What if they just changed Finn Balor's name to Cool? It would fit, right?
Well,
he is like the coolest guy.
He is the definition. He's the definition of cool. I also like, there's also a comedic moment. I don't know why this sticks out to me, but remember at G1 special in USA?
Yeah.
When his video package started playing without music.
Oh, yeah, that was day one.
Behind it, we look back and we're like, well, there's a nice montage.
Oh, I thought it was cool because I was like, oh, wow, he's got no music. That's awesome. No one does that anymore.
And
that's distinctive.
Then it just comes on late.
Yeah, I know. They had some AV trouble.
I love AV trouble is the best. But although I'm sad that Juice Robinson isn't on this because...
Maybe next year.
You know what sucks about Juice Robinson? There's a lot. But his video package isn't on YouTube. And his video package...
Oh, where he's punching people to the beat of a song.
You can only watch
yeah.
that live, apparently, because he's punching people to the beat of a song.
Yeah,
and it's
good.
A pretty quick beat. I love that.
Yeah, it's good.
Number nine.
Nine.
The glorious Bobby Roode. Now, keep in mind, the next 12 months will be very, very telling about Bobby Roode if he'll end up... Because I feel like Bobby can end up really high on this list.
Or completely
off it and off even the short list, given what we've seen the last 2 weeks on SmackDown.
And by and large, that won't have much to do with actually his talents or ability. It'd just be how he booked. Kayfabe.
Kayfabe.
But over this past year... since essentially he debuted in NXT to his call-up,
yeah,
he has been one of, if not the best heel in the entire wrestling business.
Absolutely. He was able to come in with, you know, a strong champion in Shinsuke Nakamura, and very, very quickly establish himself as heir apparent to that NXT title. He won that title at NXT TakeOver
San Antonio. Nine months after he sat ringside.
In a match that absolutely made sense for him to beat. It was a really, really well-told story on the part of Bobby Roode. The rematch, also really, really well-told story about how a guy could beat Shinsuke Nakamura. His promos have been excellent. My only bone of contention with the direction of his character, I've mentioned this before, is that when he came in, he said, I'm going to take NXT to the next level, bring in CEOs to sit down at the shows. And when we went to NXT Live, I didn't see any CEOs sitting there.
I thought we should have wore suits to NXT Orlando.
We could have done that. But
we weren't exactly ringside. We were second row.
I just kind of feel like they dropped the ball a little bit on that aspect of his character.
Yeah.
I had said before he came in that Bobby Roode was ready for Maine immediately. It's obvious that I was correct. However, his path through NXT was one of the strongest we've seen in a while. Now that he's on Maine, it remains to be seen what they're going to do with him.
Yeah.
If it's going to continue in that manner. If I read a rumor today, I guess from the Dirty Sheets, saying that he's going to be fighting Dolph in Dolph's last program in the WWE, that his contract's up in October, mm-hmm. Dolph's is. So Dolph playing up this heel sort of gimmick thing.
It would make sense because he's brought up the fancy robes.
Right, exactly.
And whatnot.
Theme songs. Yeah, exactly.
So I guess that would make sense. Let me ask you something. You brought up Shinsuke Nakamura. I'm just going to say right now, he's not on this list.
Right.
Why do you think he didn't make it? He made a tremendous impact in NXT.
Yeah. It was a great, great win-loss record.
Yeah. Although, he lost to Samoa Joe once, and then Bobby Roode twice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. Kayfabe. He lost his NXT title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Twice.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of also like, I mean, where did he end up on PWIs?
He's top 10.
Oh, was he top 10?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, he probably should have been top 10. But I don't know. I kind of feel like some of this list is also, what have you done for me lately? If we had done this list, I don't know, 3 months ago?
I don't know.
I feel like he came into SmackDown with like a big debut, but he spent... Okay, this is why.
No, I know. Since his call-up, he really hasn't done much.
Like, he had a really long feud with Dolph.
Yeah.
Like, number one, he had a really long time not even wrestling.
Yeah, about a month.
And then he had a really long feud with Dolph. Yeah, I mean, a part of that was his feud with Dolph, and that was just, nah.
Yeah.
And then he fought Jinder at SummerSlam. Maybe he would have made the list. If he would have beat Jinder at SummerSlam...
Yeah, he would have made the list.
You know, he would have made the list. If he beats Jinder at Hell in a Cell...
He'll make the list we do next year.
Maybe he'll make the list we do next year.
Yeah.
If he beats Jinder at Hell in a Cell, and then he fights AJ at WrestleMania and has like a killer match,
mm-hmm.
he's a shoo-in for this list.
Yeah. I can only think of one match off the top of my head he's had on Maine that's been really good, and mm-hmm. that's a match against Cena at SmackDown.
Yeah. He was in a feud with Baron.
Yeah. No, none of those matches were very good.
And yeah, the Cena match was really good, but again, that match was, what, 10 minutes and three of it was spent on commercials?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there was a huge pay-per-view quality match that he had on main roster since his call-up, then, you know, that would have stood out.
Yes.
But he just, you know, I don't know. It's like they're afraid to, like, really pull the trigger on him.
I know.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I mean, on top of that, like, what heels do you have to work with on SmackDown? You have Baron. You have...
Mahal. You have Rusev.
Mahal. Rusev's been gone. And even then, it's Rusev.
And that's why it makes so much more sense to have Roode come to SmackDown as a heel.
Yeah, I know. No, I agree totally.
Because he could be the top of the card heel that show really needs.
Yeah.
Next.
Number eight.
Eight.
Kevin Owens. Okay, so here's the deal. So around this time, 1 year ago.
Yeah.
He won the Universal Championship. Granted.
It was kind of handed to him.
It was literally handed to him. And it wasn't like the best Universal Championship run.
No, but he had some really good matches against Seth Rollins.
He did.
Some almost really good matches against AJ Styles recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He had some really good matches against Chris Jericho. If the first criteria is being good,
oh man,
Kevin Owens is a shoe-in for this list every year.
Oh, huge, huge.
Because he is one of the best all-around performers in the entire industry.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Where did he land on the PWA list?
He was 3.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Much higher than ours.
I think they put a lot more stock into kayfabe than we do.
Oh, yeah.
And since he held the Universal title for the better part of
a year. He was also involved in, I mean, it's definitely top 3 segment of the year, the Festival of Friendship. He had the amazing run with Chris Jericho as best friends.
Yeah.
And then he turned on Jericho in the Festival of Friendship, got everybody talking. Whenever he is on SmackDown, I am always supremely entertained.
Oh, yeah.
Just this past week, he entered himself as ref. And I mentioned this to you off cam. I just get the feeling that Kevin Owens books his own segments these days.
Could be.
I get the feeling that they say, Kevin, what do you want to do this week? And then Kevin lays out a really unique thing to do because he's always involved in like unique things to do. He comes out, cuts a promo on Shane McMahon. Shane McMahon comes out there and he announces a match against his best friend or his former best friend, Sami Zayn and Aiden English for them to fight.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Owens just doesn't just leave. He goes to commentary, hangs out there for a bit, runs down Byron Saxton. Then he decides that he's so hot about this ref situation, he gets in the ring and puts on the ref jersey,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then he ends up powerbombing Sami Zayn. That's something that's very creative and very unique, and it wouldn't surprise me. I don't know. I'm not trying to take credit away from writers. Wouldn't surprise me if that was a Kevin Owens idea.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and he always finds himself in segments and situations like that are just interesting.
Yeah.
Choosing his own ref last week.
Yeah.
That feels like either whoever's writing Kevin Owens is coming up with the most unique stuff on SmackDown.
Or he has a say in stuff. Another thing Kevin Owens is really good at is making whatever championship he holds seem important because he values it so much.
Yeah.
It's so important to him that it elevates the stock of the title.
Yeah. And even I think the story that we're trying to tell with the Universal Championship, I just think it wasn't told all that great. You know, relying on Jericho all the time to win and then trying to find himself. I think they got lost a little bit in there. And then, of course, it was, you know, waylaid by the Goldberg-Lesnar thing. So who knows if Goldberg didn't sign, what road they would have taken? Would they have just jobbed him out to Lesnar? Probably.
Yeah.
Kevin Owens, he's always, I mentioned this off camera too, and maybe this is reflected in the number 8 spot. Sometimes I feel like I take Kevin Owens for granted.
I know.
You know?
Well, I think if his Universal title reign was stronger, he'd been way higher in this list.
I mean, he's kind of in the Seth Rollins spot. It's just the only reason Seth Rollins really didn't make this is because for me personally, A, he was injured for a couple months leading into WrestleMania, and B, when he turned face, it lost some luster. You know, like it just wasn't as effective for me as a heel. Number 7.
7.
The Young Bucks. I don't think anybody on the independent circuit, and I say independent, they're in Ring of Honor, they're in New Japan, but they're everywhere. They're everywhere. Has made the kind of crossover impact that these guys have. They have their Hot Topic deal and New Japan in general, but it's fueled
by Bullet Club.
Yeah, by Bullet Club. And
the standout of Bullet Club is someone that we're going to talk about later on this list, and the Young Bucks.
But these days, you go to any wrestling show, and not only do you see Bullet Club shirts, but you see those Young Bucks shirts. You see them everywhere.
Yes.
And I think it's at the point where they're so well designed that people want to wear them regardless of what they even mean. The dude at my Hot Topic didn't even know what they were about, but he was wearing a shirt.
Yeah.
And so
they always they always deliver the goods in the ring too.
They always deliver the goods in the ring. They're showing in the ring. They're showing that you can tell really, really good stories. Matches that have good stories can also be spot fests.
Mm-hmm.
They had some absolutely classic matchups with Roppongi Vice.
Yes. Their trilogy was really good.
Was fantastic. I know they've been going all over the place. We've seen matches on the independent circuit, the Elite versus like British Strong Style, for example. They keep on matching these guys up with all sorts of different opponents, and it's always so much fun. There's always something buzzworthy that comes out of it.
And they have their spots that they like to do match to match, but Rolling Stone had a really interesting profile on the Young Bucks a couple months back where they had a camera crew follow them around for a Ring of Honor show where they were taking on LIJ.
Mm-hmm.
And just to see them backstage talk to their opponents and lay out the spots in the match and how creative they are with how they set up their matches. it's especially after how long they've been doing it, finding new ways to incorporate spots they've probably been doing for a dozen years,
yeah,
or however long they've been wrestling,
yeah,
into matches still, yeah, is really impressive.
Yeah, you see, yeah, it was, that was my favorite part about that. You see, I like when it showed them in there with Chuck Taylor and was it Trent?
Yeah.
Okay. But then you see them, like you said, backstage with
LIJ. Oh, they intercut it. They intercut them talking about the spot.
Yeah.
And then cut to the spot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they also, when they were talking to LIJ, it was obviously there's, you know, a bit of a language barrier there to get through. And to see them like communicating in this, you know, the universal language of wrestling, it was fantastic. It was, yeah, it's so fascinating. And you bring up the Rolling Stone thing, and that brings up another point about the Young Bucks, is that the sports media seems to be fascinated with them. You, yeah, see so many articles from legitimate publications, Sports Illustrated, yeah, Forbes, Rolling Stone, all sorts of publications doing these high quality pieces about the Young Bucks and the phenomenon that they are bringing to the indie version of pro wrestling, the non-WWE world, yes, of pro wrestling.
Yes.
And it does wonders, absolute wonders for the industry in general.
Perhaps more than any wrestler I can think of in the last few years, developing a brand on the independents.
Oh.
And parlaying, yeah, that to massive success.
Yeah.
The Young Bucks were one of the people.
Oh, man.
And two of the people at the fore of that.
Yeah.
Developing their brand, yeah, independent circuit. Developing a huge following, mm, going to pro wrestling tees and, yeah, being their top merch seller.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing too, is that they're and granted, not everybody can be the Young Bucks. Very,
oh,
few,
yeah,
people can,
yeah,
be the Young Bucks, but you know, you don't have to be the Young Bucks to, if you're a wrestler, to understand that there are more ways to generate revenue in the business beyond just your payout for the match. Pro wrestling tees, they've got their Being the Elite video series, which is now, you know, every upload does over 150,000.
Yeah.
And they are absolutely entertaining. And these guys are doing this just on the road. Like, they filmed this stuff with their iPhone.
Yeah.
And there was one of the episodes showed Nick as the younger one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nick, they got him a new, like, MacBook Pro so he can edit it properly. And I think he was editing it, like, on, you know, iMovie on the phone or something.
Goodness.
Which is, if you've ever tried it, it's not difficult, but it's laborious.
Yes.
You know? And so, it's from a business standpoint, it's illustrating what you can do as an independent contractor in the wrestling world.
Yep.
It's absolutely fascinating.
And to not need the WWE at all.
Right, exactly. Number six.
Six.
Neville. Whoa. Talk about a revelation. I just realized we have a box over there we haven't opened.
Oh, okay.
Talk about a revelation. This Neville guy, who we've seen for years now from NXT, up to Maine as the sort of high flying man that gravity forgot.
He broke his ankle in a match against Chris Jericho, came back and reinvented himself as, yeah, the king of the cruiserweights.
And as you said,
it has been an absolute revelation.
The most magnetic heel personality in the WWE today. Bar none, seriously. Like, I mean, I love Kevin Owens, fantastic heel. But Neville has simply reinvented his character into this precisely thought out, maniacal, villainous, like, he drops these promos that are great.
He adapted his in-ring style to fit his new character. He,
yeah,
doesn't rely so much on the high-risk, high-flying stuff. Still does a little bit of it.
Yeah.
But he overpowers his performance, yeah, now. And he still puts on really, really, really good matches.
And he has cleared out. He has essentially cleared out 205 Live. Now they have him potentially getting into something with Enzo. I really, really hope they squash Enzo.
Yeah,
with
I
Neville.
Hope so too.
I have a feeling they're not going to. But Neville is absolutely on the. I never would have thought, and I've mentioned this before, that if you put Neville in a program with Austin Aries, Neville would be out promoing Austin Aries.
I know.
Just never saw it happening.
We never got a hint that he had promo abilities like that. Definitely not on the main roster prior to his heel turn.
Yeah.
And I don't remember him doing a whole lot of talking in NXT either.
Right, yeah.
But it seemed like one of those situations where someone finds the character,
mm-hmm,
and it's for whatever reason, it just resonates with them.
Yeah.
And it just comes so naturally.
Yeah.
Because at no point do you ever feel like he's forcing anything.
Right.
Everything seems so genuine. And even stays in character when he's on Up, Up, Down, Down.
Oh, and that's, you know, there's been a lot of discussion, especially this past year, about, you know, the state of kayfabe, if you will. People posting pictures on the tour, you know, Braun and Roman hanging out, arm in arm, hand in hand, and, you know, pictures posted and then taken down. Oh, breaking kayfabe. But Neville is one of those guys. And honestly, like, you and I are both pretty much of the opinion, oh, they're performers, you know. Let them have a life outside.
Yes.
But with Neville, I don't know. Like, it would, I've said this, it would kind of bum me out a little bit if I saw him clown around, joking around like he's, you know.
Well, he does joke around because he manages to be funny.
Yeah.
But still be in character.
Right, exactly, yeah. It's like every time you see him in like a still, he's always.
Yeah.
He's always just, especially around a span of time when he didn't have the Cruiserweight title. Yeah. Oh, it was fantastic.
Well, that Rocket League ad that he's in. I mean, he's in Neville character the whole time, but he's still funny.
Yeah.
He's still engaging. He's still entertaining.
Yeah. It's so great. It's so great. Number five.
Five.
Tetsuya Naito.
Top star in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
He's like the coolest guy.
Well, should his name be cool then instead of Finn Balor? Should they have a match to determine who's coolest?
What is the Japanese term for cool?
I don't know.
You know who what he is? He's Tranquilo.
He is Tranquilo.
Anyways, of course, he is the leader of LIJ. When we first started watching New Japan this past January at Wrestle Kingdom, we immediately tuned into this guy and was like, whoa.
And then we checked out his match against Kenny Omega at last year's G1.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Phenomenal match of the year last year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then he put on another spectacular match or series of spectacular matches this year during the G1, culminating in his win over Kenny Omega to claim.
In a who-can-break-his-neck first match.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But he had a really good match against Kota Ibushi, which featured our potential spot of the year.
Yeah.
Second rope pile driver.
That's right. He had a fantastic match against Ishii in the G1 special in USA that we got to see live.
Yes.
So that was a lot of fun.
In terms of character work, I don't know if anybody, at least in New Japan maybe, is better.
Yeah, yeah,
His character is so well-defined. Yeah. He does so much by doing so little.
It's New Japan. They're in Japan. They speak Japanese. You don't need to know what he's saying. You don't have to know what he's saying to understand exactly who he is.
Mm-hmm.
In New Japan, they tell their stories. They develop their characters through their in-ring work, which is a revelation. And then you've got, you know, the details are in, you know, the packaging. LIJ is like the coolest faction around. I mean, it's either them or Bullet Club. And Naito is sort of the head of that.
Everything you need to know about Naito, at least most this past year, was how he treated the Intercontinental title.
Yes.
That's Naito.
Yeah, exactly. You see gif after gif on Twitter of him just destroying the
or
title.
Or trying to pay for a meal.
That was my favorite, is that picture of him. Because that look on his face, he's holding the title, he's holding his hat in one, he's all... trying to pay for a meal, a crap meal with his IC title because there's too many belts in New Japan, he says.
Yep.
That's fantastic. That's absolutely great.
But also, like, you know, going back, and this is long-term storytelling in New Japan. My understanding from what I read up on is when he won the G1 the first time in 2013, I think it was, he was supposed to headline Wrestle Kingdom the following January against Okada.
Okada, yeah.
They had a segment, wasn't well received, so they put the main event spot up to a vote.
Right.
Fans wanted Nakamura versus Tanahashi in the main event for
the IC title,
Intercontinental title.
Yeah.
So he might just hold a grudge against that belt because it took his main event spot.
Right, right.
And that might play into why he treated the belt so poorly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's long term booking. That's a storyline that spans three plus years.
I know. It's great.
It's
great
impressive. Stuff.
Number four.
Four.
Asuka.
Yeah.
Asuka.
I mean, she hasn't lost.
I mean, okay, here's the thing. Kayfabe-wise, she wins everything.
Yeah.
She literally, they have referenced Goldberg when talking about her streak. That is, and then they just said she beat Robin?
Rockin' Robin.
Rockin' Robin.
For the longest women's title reign in the last 30, 40 years.
I mean, Fabulous Moolah just owned her own title.
Yeah.
And so she just held on to it for like 10 years. That's kind of a ridiculous streak. You can't really beat that streak.
Yeah.
And then there's Bruno's, but that's just way too long. So there's that, A. And so her entire run has just basically been, who's going to beat Asuka?
And the answer is nobody.
Nobody beat Asuka. That was the end of her story in NXT. What a fantastic story that was. And every single match, I mean, so many of her matches have been absolutely compelling.
She had two really good matches against Bayley last year.
Mm-hmm.
She's had two really good matches against Ember Moon this year.
Yes.
And she had a really good match against Nikki Cross also mm-hmm. this year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She always delivers in the ring.
I feel like she's
such
put
an
on,
engaging presence and personality.
She's put on the best matches on NXT TV itself, I feel. Like you said, yeah, totally engaging personality. Like when she comes out, she has that cool mask. She has a now iconic theme music of hers. She does a little dancing around stuff. She's just the most eccentric, interesting thing you see in the ring whenever she's on TV,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, her promos, when she starts just shouting in Japanese, it's fantastic.
Great.
When
it's
she goes
great.
Up to Regal and says, I want to fight them, and he says, who? And she says, all of them.
No, she yells.
Yeah, she yells, all of them. It's absolutely fantastic stuff. So she has being good, she has impact, and she has kayfabe.
Yes. All of them. She satisfies all criteria.
All criteria. Number three.
Three.
AJ Styles.
The face that runs the place.
Yep.
The champ that runs the camp.
And he has held down SmackDown. Granted, John Cena is a ratings pop. However, the foundation of SmackDown is AJ Styles.
Very
he's
much
been holding
so.
It down. The people love him.
Just this past year, he's held the WWE title and mm-hmm. the U.S. title.
Yep. And he's just like Cena before him. He has turned the United States title into the Open Challenge title, which is something we've always wanted and loved.
Yes.
And so far, it's made things more interesting whenever
yes.
he's out. It's
yes.
interesting stuff.
Just this past year, if we go back to, say, SummerSlam, his mm-hmm. match against Cena,
oh, yeah.
spectacular
Absolutely.
Last year.
Yeah.
They had a rematch at Royal Rumble, also really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
He managed to get a really good match out of Shane McMahon at WrestleMania.
Yeah. We thought it was going to be a stinker.
Yeah.
Because Shane, you know, hadn't wrestled in ages.
Yeah, a real match. Old. I mean, this match against The Undertaker.
Right. And
at the previous
granted,
year, WrestleMania doesn't really count.
It just goes to show that you can, AJ Styles can carry a match, can carry anything or anybody to a fantastic match.
Yes.
It was wildly entertaining. Tons of fun.
Yes.
AJ Styles. I mean, he's the best.
Well, he's third best.
He's the best.
He's
the best in WWE.
3 and 2 are kind of tied. There's one little thing that might push 2 slightly ahead.
Oh, interesting. All right, let's get to it. Number two. Kenny Omega.
I mean, he's been involved in potentially the 3 greatest matches of all time just this past year. Also.
So is number one.
Yeah, I know. But number one has also done more than just that.
Yeah, that's true.
But so has Kenny. His trilogy against Okada,
mm-hmm.
as I said, regarded potentially, at least by Dave Meltzer, seems to be 3 of the greatest matches of all time, if not 1, 2, or 3 of the greatest matches of all time.
Yeah.
But also Omega, as leader of Bullet Club,
mm-hmm.
has spearheaded their mainstream crossover. Everything
just
did a kickstart with his match against Okada at Wrestle Kingdom beginning
yeah.
of this year.
Yeah.
And while he took that break, he generated so much buzz about himself.
Because
mm-hmm. At the time of Wrestle Kingdom last year, it kind of felt like Bullet Club were...
Well, yeah, you had Cody...
Kind of
you
overstaying their welcome almost.
You had Cody Rhodes making his Bullet Club debut, and he wasn't even wearing Bullet Club like merchandise. I think he had like the logo small on his boots. Nobody was coming out with him. You know, the New Japan had been raided, so AJ was gone. Like Nakamura wasn't Bullet Club, but he was gone. Gallows and Anderson,
yeah.
all the staples were gone.
Kenny and the Young Bucks seemed more focused on the Elite.
Yeah, they were wearing Elite logos more.
So it kind of felt like, okay, maybe the popularity of Bullet Club is on the wane. But upon his return, for whatever reason, New Japan is securing really good licensing deals,
yeah.
having their merch in Hot Topic, mm-hmm. and is selling like hotcakes.
Yeah,
and Kenny is the leader of the Bullet Club. Some of the credit has to be given to him for
oh,
that.
Oh, for sure, absolutely.
Not only resurgence of Bullet Club, but their mainstream crossover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have things like you have the feud that he was getting into that he was teasing with Adam Cole, which seemed to have sort of leaped over to Cody mm-hmm. once Adam Cole left. And so you've had that intrigue. You've had things like, you know,
the Tama Tonga calling him out during the G1.
Right, exactly. So there's all sorts of intrigue going on, but they always come back together. You had the Bullet Club, speaking of the G1 in USA, you had Bullet Club at the end, you know, with their big show of strength. And I just think that New Japan understands, that if any merchandise, if any crossover, if anybody's going to have crossover appeal, it's going to be in the U.S. It's going to be Bullet Club, obviously, because the entire point of Bullet Club is it's a bunch of foreigners, you know, non-Japanese wrestlers coming into New Japan and making their own mark. And they understand that that's, you know, that's the crossover appeal right
there.
Yeah. But like you said, that couldn't have happened without the leader of Bullet Club, buying into that.
But also generating so much buzz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, sure.
Because after his match against Okada at Wrestle Kingdom, there's a bunch of articles about him. He's getting some pretty significant press.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came back, huge story, coming back to New Japan after a lot of people thought he was going to make the jump to WWE.
Yeah.
His stock probably will never be higher as it was after that Wrestle Kingdom match.
Yeah, yeah.
But he came back, and then we all thought he's going to win the New Japan Cup, so we can accept the rematch with Okada right away. No, he lost first round to Ishii in a great match.
Yeah.
And that kicked off a story between the two of them that culminated at the G1 special in USA when Omega claimed the IWGP United States championship for himself by defeating Ishii in a great match.
Yeah.
Kenny Omega just has great matches.
Yeah, he has.
Whether he's in a six-man tag match wearing his house show tights and a t-shirt, he will still have a fun match.
He can, and that's the thing about Kenny too, is that not only can he do the best serious dramatic matches, he can put on like comedic classics with Yano that are absolutely fantastic.
Or the six-man tag match, I think at the second night of Honor Rising.
Yeah, okay.
That was so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways,
Kenny Omega, he's the best.
Well,
except for number one.
One.
Kazuchika Okada. Yeah, it's Okada.
Okada's the best.
PWI 500 got it right this year. Okada is absolutely the best. Listen, this guy has, like you said earlier, put on three of the best matches, not just this year, but potentially of all time. And when he's not fighting Kenny Omega, he's been putting on classic matches against guys like Minoru Suzuki.
Yeah.
Against
Shibata.
Bad Luck Fale.
Tiger Mask W, Kota Ibushi.
Yeah. And then we always leave something out.
Yeah, who did he face? First it was Suzuki.
Cody at G1 Special in USA.
That was a good match.
He brought Cody Rhodes to a great match.
Yeah.
But he puts on amazing matches time and time again. He is the most legitimate world champion in professional wrestling right now. And when I say legitimate, I mean being good Impact kayfabe.
Yeah.
I mean, Brock Lesnar is like legitimate because he's a legit MMA fighter.
Yeah.
But in terms of professional wrestling, nobody is more legitimate as a professional wrestling world champion than Okada. And his story of this past year of withstanding Kenny Omega at Wrestle Kingdom and then Minoru Suzuki destroying his knee, or, you know, taking advantage of his bum knee and then just going to town on it. And then Shibata freaking headbutting him to death.
Beating him to a pulp.
Exactly.
Withstanding that. Withstanding Kenny for an hour.
For an hour.
For a draw.
Exactly.
Withstanding Fale.
Mm-hmm.
Tiger Mask W.
Mm-hmm.
And then another nearly half hour match against Omega in the G1 semifinals.
Mm-hmm. Cody at G1 in USA.
Yeah.
And so that's what a world champion is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just, hey, let's fight this guy, and then let's do it again in a Punjabi prison match, and it's you know, and every time it's like, could he actually lose this?
And that's the power of their stories they're telling over there in New Japan is the story of Okada, how he will eventually lose that title is because he has just been beat up so much over the span of his, I think what will end up being when he eventually probably lose, we all assume he's going to lose a night to a Wrestle Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll be around 500 days he's held that belt, maybe longer than that.
Yeah.
And just the punishment he has taken over that 500 days was just, and I think they kind of tease it during the last Omega match where Omega saw the tape on his neck and says, that's my target.
Yeah.
And went after it and went after it and went after it and went after it and went after it.
Started slapping away at it,
And eventually won. Naito is going to take notes of all the punishment that. Be cool if their Wrestle Kingdom match, it was his Naito going through a checklist of all the body parts that Okada's hurt throughout the year and just attacking them individually.
Chronologically?
Yeah, exactly. That would be fascinating.
Yeah,
to culminate an entire year's worth of storytelling for Okada in that respect.
Yeah.
And he'll deliver. It'll be great. Yeah. Okada might be the best seller in wrestling. He's so good at selling.
I know. You hurt when you watch one of his matches.
Yes.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, PWI, they got it right. We got it right. Okada, best wrestler on the planet right now.
Right now, yep.
Yeah. So anyways, that's it. Let us know what you guys think in the comments. I know you guys probably have a lot of heated discussion about
yes.
who we might have left off this list. Oh, you're listening. Anyways, that's
it. I really want Ricochet to be on here. I love Ricochet.
I love Ricochet too. He's not a top 10 guy.
Samoa Joe.
Love him too. Not a top 10 guy. This is our top 10.
This is our top 10.
Yeah. Till next time, top guys. Later.
Bye.